Good morning, everybody.
This is one of those weeks that I've decided that we're going to concentrate on the Haftarah and see the Parsha through the eyes of the Haftarah. It is one of my favorite Haftarahs, and I know already what you're thinking. I say that about every Haftarah, but I am always looking for a very special kind of relationship between the Sedra and the Haftarah. I've already learned to assume that the relationship or the connection between the two is not only that which seems to hit the eye immediately. There's always something deeper, something beneath the surface. I feel usually that there is more than one reason why a Haftarah is chosen. And of course this is a fascinating Haftarah. The Parashat HaShavua is Parashat Naso. In Parashat Naso, of course, we have the Parsha of Nazir, a person who accepts upon himself to be a Nazir, meaning therefore that he is not permitted, as a result of his taking an oath of that sort, he is not permitted to drink wine, nor is he permitted to cut his hair, nor is he permitted to be defiled by contact with a dead body. That's the halacha of Nazir. Of course, in the Gemara, there has always been the question, is the state of Nazir something that Torah looks upon with favor or with disfavor? Is Nazir chote? Is Nazir a sinner? Or is Nazir a kadosh? Is he holy? And there are different approaches. The Torah says that a Nazir is supposed to bring at the end of the days of his Nizirut, the end of the days that he is a Nazir, he's supposed to bring a korban chatas, a sin offering. And the Gemara asks, v'chi al eize nefesh chatozeh, what sin did he commit? And the Gemara says that the sin that he committed is that he prohibited something that is permitted to him. Lo dayach. Gemara one place says, isn't it enough that which the Torah prohibited that you have to go ahead and prohibit other things? There's enough that was prohibited by Torah. And then, of course, there's another opinion in the Gemara that sees the Nazir as being one who sanctifies himself, makes himself pure. There is a holiness around the Nazir. And of course, both are true. Nazir can be both chote, he can be sinner, and he can be kadosh. The person who is not able to truly be a Nazir, in other words, one should not attempt to aspire to places that he is incapable of, to heights that he's incapable of achieving. Then again, the Gemara tells us about a Nazir who felt that he was being overcome by his Yetzer Hara, and therefore he made the vow to be a Nazir, to stay away from wine. And in a sense, the state of the Zeros is something that, as a temporary measure, may have the power for a person to correct himself. There are times that people have to go a little bit to extremes in order that they should be able to return to the Rambam's golden mean. So the Nazir in the Gemara has always been up for discussion, good or bad. One of the Nazirim is, of course, Shimshon. Shimshon is the topic of the Haftarah. Shimshon is unique, he is special. To understand Shimshon is in and of itself something that is extremely difficult. We're going to try our best, and we're also going to see if during the course of our study of the Haftarah we can find other things that relate the Haftarah and the Parsha itself. Let's begin, as I usually like to do, let's begin by reading the Haftarah. The Haftarah is chapter 13 of Sefer Shoftim. And the fact is that the Haftarah begins with the second pasuk in chapter 13. I will read the first pasuk in chapter 13, because it may be interesting to get back to it. The first pasuk is Vayosifu b'nei Yisrael la'asot hara b'yinei Hashem. The children of Israel continued or did evil in the eyes of God, Vayitnei Hashem b'yad plishtim, and God gave them into the hands of the plishtim arba'im shana. Jews were in the hands of plishtim for 40 years. Of those 40 years, 20 Shimshon is going to be the Shofet, and 20 or part of 20 Yiftach HaGiladi who preceded him. Maybe in order to set the background for some of the things that I want to say, I'm going to read for you a few psukim at the end of chapter 12. The end of chapter 12, there are a whole series of shoftim that are listed with a pasuk for each. Shimshon is the shofet about whom more is said than any other shofet. There will be 3-4 chapters that are going to deal with Shimshon. Well, there was a chapter that dealt with Yiftach. Gidon had 2 or 3 chapters, 2 chapters for Dvorah and Barak ben Avinoam, but Shimshon certainly gets the longest treatment in Sefer Shoftim. And here, at the end of chapter 12, there are a number of Shoftim that are listed quickly. Vayishpot Acharav, after Yiftach, the judge after Yiftach was Ivtzan mi Beit Lechem. Ivtzan from Beit Lechem. By the way, Ivtzan mi Beit Lechem is Boaz. The Gemara says, Ivtzan from Beit Lechem is Boaz. Vayihi lo shloshim banim u'shloshim banot shilach hachutza. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters whom he sent outside the family to marry. U'shloshim banot hevi lebanav min hachutz, and he brought 30 daughters for his 30 sons. Vayishpot et Yisrael sheva shanim, he judged Israel 7 years. Vayomat Ivtzon vayikaveh b'Beit Lechem, Ivtzon died and was buried in Beit Lechem. Vayishpot acharav et Yisrael elon hazevuloni, elon from the tribe of Zvulun. Vayishpot et Yisrael eser shanim, 10 years. He was judged. Vayomat Elon Hazvuloni vayikaver ba'ayalon be'eret Zvulun. Elon Hazvuloni died, was buried in Ayalon in the land of Zvulun. Vayishpot Achra bet Yisrael, the one who judged Israel afterwards, was Avdon ben Hillel ha'pir Atoni. Avdon ben Hillel came from a place, Piron. Vayihilo arboim banim, he had 40 sons, u'shloshim b'nei banim, and 30 Einiklech rochvim al shivim ayadim, who rode on 70 donkeys. By Yishpotek Yisrael shmona shanim, he judged Israel 8 years. Ayomat Avdon ben Hillel apiratoni, by Yikoved et piraton be'eretz Ephraim b'har Amaleki. Avdon ben Hillel apiratoni died, and he was buried in Piraton, name of a place in the land of Ephraim, on a mountain that was called Har HaMaleki. All right. There is a frightening Gemara. The Gemara Masechta Bava Basra says the following: Ivtzon ze Boaz. Ivtzon from Beit Lechem was Boaz. The says the Gemara, Maika Mashmalon, what does the what is he telling us? That the Ivtzon is Boaz? He says to tell us that which Rabba Bar Avuna said. That Rabba Bar Avuna said in the name of Rav, 120 parties were made by Boaz. He made 120 parties. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters, 60 chasanas. For each chasana he made an engagement party in advance. So there was Erisin and there was Nesuin, 120 parties. Ubechol achat v'achat, also shnei mishtaot, for each one of the 60 he made 2 parties. Echad b'beit aviv v'echad b'beit chamav, one in the father's house and the other in the in-law's house. but frightening is the next line of the Gemara. Ubechulan lo zimein et manoach. And to all of these 60 parties, 120 parties, 2 times 60, he didn't invite Manoach. Manoach is going to be the father of Shimshon. He didn't invite Manoach. Gemara in the Sefta Bava Basra, Tzadik Aleph Amid Aleph. He didn't invite Manoach. Omar, why didn't he invite Manoach? So he said, Kudna Akora, B'may Parali, Kudna Akora, he's childless. B'may Parali, how is he going to repay me? He won't be able to invite me back for a wedding. Frightening. Obviously, this is extremely, extremely frightening. Of course, the rest of the Gemara is going to be even more difficult. V'kulam meitu b'chayav. All of the 60 children died in his lifetime. What he really remained with at the end was only one. The one that's born after his death. Oved. The child that he has from Chud. V'kulam meitu b'chayav. The Hainu Dam the Inchi, this is what people say. Bechayecho diyaldit shitin. During your lifetime, you gave birth to 60 who are going to die. Shitin lamalach. So, what did you benefit from all of them? Ichpil, but he married a second time. Ve'olit chad, the mishitins, that is, he gave birth to one who was more important than all of the other 60. So, of course, one of the messages of the Gemara is the idea that one never knows from which child one is going to have nachas. For that matter, the nachas for Boaz came after his death. Obviously, it's extremely... I've always had difficulty with the Gemara. I don't think that he... I'd like to feel that it wasn't something as callous as, well, he can't invite me back to a wedding, so therefore I'm not going to invite him. I don't know why, I always had the feeling that most probably Boaz didn't want to invite him, because can you imagine, he's going to invite him to the chasana, he's going to invite him to one of his weddings, at any one of his weddings, his 60 children with his 60 in-law children, and most probably a few hundred Einiklach are going to be running around, and Manoach is going to come with his wife and see all of this. I have a feeling that that this is what was really behind Boaz not inviting Manoach. But Chazal, obviously, in the sharp way in which they write it, our rabbis are telling us, you know, maybe you made a mistake. Maybe Manoach and his wife are never invited to a simcha for the same reason, and maybe they feel badly. At least let's come to a simcha, let's be sameach with somebody else. A little bit joy in our lives, to come amongst people. Difficult for me to believe that Boaz made a simple cheshbon. Listen, and then again, the cheshbon most probably would have worked out in Boaz's favor. Manoach and his wife would have to give 60 presents, and he can invite Manoach to each one of the weddings and get 60 presents, but Manoach won't invite him back. It works. In other words, there are two levels of sensitivity. One level of sensitivity is, I'm not going to invite them. Most probably the profounder degree of sensitivity is, yes, I'm going to invite them. Let him decide. Very good. That's also a point. Manoah has the choice not to come. Not to come, but at least give him the option. Give him the option. Yes, that's why Gemara, that's why, incidentally, that's why I say that from his point of view, he saw not inviting as an act of chesed. The not inviting was a kindness. The not inviting. All right. We'll see how this is. How this is going to be. How this is going to be important. It means also that never pass judgment. Never give up hope. This childless couple may very well become the parents of an extremely unusual, most probably the most unusual individual of all in Tanakh. All right, let's another few introductions that I want to read. A Mishnah in Masechet Nazir, the Mishnah says the following. There are three kinds of Nazir. A person who says, Hareini Nazir, I accept upon myself to be a Nazir. Hareize Nazir. V'chol digdukei Nazirut alav, and all of the laws of Nazirut apply to him. We said the laws of Nazirut as expressed in this parasha are three. One is not permitted to drink wine or anything that comes from wine. One is not permitted to come in contact with a dead body. One is not permitted to cut one's hair. The next part of the Mishnah says that there's a second kind of Nazir. The second kind of Nazir is a person who says, Hareini Kishimshon. If a person says, I want to be like Shimshon, I want to be like the son of Manoach, I want to be like the husband of Delilah, I want to be like the one who uprooted the gates of Aza. One of the things that he did was he uprooted the gates of Aza and brought them of all places. He carried them on his back to Hebron in the middle of the night. We can use a Shimshon today. I want to be Kimishanikru Plishtim Atenov, like the one whom the Plishtim blinded his eyes. Hareza Nazir Shimshon. So that means there is a regular Nazir, the one that the Torah is talking about. There's a Nazir Shimshon, and then there's a third kind called Nazir Olam, a person who is a Nazir forever. We know of two people who are Nazir Olam. The two Nazirei Olam were Shmuel, his mother says in the first chapter, give me a child, Umoro lo yala al rosho, a scissor will not go upon his head. That's what his mother Chana said. Avshalom, the son of David, was a Nazir Olam, a Nazir forever. The Mishnah says, what's the difference between a Nazir Olam and a Nazir Shimshon? Nazir Olam, the Mishnah says, Hirbid Saro, if his hair gets heavy upon him, he's permitted to lighten it with a razor. He's permitted to cut his hair. In other words, he has to let it grow long, and from time to time he is permitted a trib, yes. And he's supposed to bring three sacrifices every time he takes that kind of a haircut. Nazir Shimshon is never permitted to cut his hair at all. So therefore, I have a feeling this is one of my approaches, one that I've not seen in the Mefarshim. And it follows with something that I believe I said last week when we talked about why we read Megillat Rut on Shavuot. So one of the reasons that we gave for the reading of the Megillat Rut on Shavuot is the Yontif of Torah Shebichtav, the written law. Megillat Rut demonstrates to us that not only was Torah Shebichtav, the written law, given at Sinai, but there was also the oral law. And the entire Megillah presents us with an extremely important principle, that there's an oral law, and that's why Shmuel wrote it, to tell us that the only ones who are not permitted to enter the congregation of God are Ammoni Umoavi, the males of Ammon Umoav. But the females of Ammon Umoav are permitted to marry. So that means Megillat Rut is the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law that complements the Torah Shebichtav, which was given on Shavuot. I have a feeling on some level that may be true with this Haftarah. In the Torah, in the Parsha, we have a Parsha of Nazir, but the Parsha of Nazir is talking about somebody who is Nazir for a limited period of time. The Halacha says, Stam Nazirut, when a person just says Hareini Nazir, it means 30 days and no more, unless one is going to specify, I want to be a Nazir for 60 days, I want to be a Nazir for 90 days. But Nazirut is limited. How do we know 30 days? Because it says Nazir, in the parish it says Nazir Yihyeh, he shall be a Nazir. Yihyeh, the gematria of Yihyeh, there are two yuds and two hays, makes it a total of 30. A gematria that tells us Ahalach. Nazir, Nazirut Shimshon does not appear any place in Torah. How do we know about Nazirut Shimshon? Only from the story of Shimshon. So the Haftorah over here is the Torah Shebe'alpeh that complements the Torah Shebe'chtav. In Torah Shebe'chtav we're told about a normal Nazir, and here we are told about the very special kind of Nazir, Nazirut Shimshon. The Nazir Olam also appears as a Haftorah Shmuel. The birth of Shmuel is also in the Haftorah. Alright, so therefore I'm saying that number one, the Haftorah is the Torah Sheba'al Peh that is complements, completes the Torah Shebi Bichtav. I also have the feeling, remember, Parashat Naso and this Haftorah always follow Shavuot. It's always the Shabbos after Shavuot. In a sense, the story of Boaz's life, is the birth of Shimshon. The birth of Shimshon is related to Boaz. If we want to know the tragedy of Boaz's life, the tragedy of his life is related to Manoach, a man called Manoach. A man called Manoach and his wife who were not invited by Boaz. Who were not invited by Boaz to a party. In a sense, by both Boaz and Manoach, what we learn is never to give up hope. Can one imagine the hopelessness of Boaz's situation? Most probably was infinitely more tragic than than Manoach. Nishgat kinkinder. But to have had and to have lost, and then in the end, of course, the happy ending that Boaz has Oved, who is going to be the father of Yishai and the father of David, and Manoach and his wife are blessed with a child. Alright, we've said enough, there's a lot more to be said. Let's begin simply by reading the Haftorah. So the Haftorah, as I say, is begins with the second Pasuk in chapter 13. The first one is God gave the Jewish people into the hands of the Plishtim. Vayihi ish echod, and there was a man Mitzor'ah, Mimishpachat Hadani Ushmo Manoach. There was a man from Tzor'ah, lived in a place called Tzor'ah, Mimishpachat Hadani, from the family of Dan, and his name was Manoach. The Ishtoa Kara Velo Yalada. His wife was barren and had not given birth. Ushmo Manoach, the Gemara says, from Ushmo Manoach, we learned that Manoach was a great tzaddik, because throughout Tanakh, the way in which Tanakh describes a person who is a tzaddik by saying Ushmo such and such, and the Gemara by tzaddikim the word Shem comes, in other words Ushmo means he was a man of a great name. He was a man who had a great name. The name by which he was known was Manoach, but his greatness was even greater than his name. And then by Rishoyim, it's always the name, and then it says Shmo. For example, Goliath Shmo, Naval Shmo, Sheva ben Bichri Shmo. But Tzadikim, it says Ushmo Elkanah, Ushmo Yishai, Ushmo Boaz, Ish Yehudi Hoyo Veshushan Habiro, Ushmo Mordechai. Wherever the Torah writes it, Ushmo, and then the name, you know that we're talking about a tzaddik. Ushmo Manoach, we're talking about a man who is a great tzaddik. From the tribe of Dan, the Ishtoa Karav Lo Yalada, his wife was barren, An angel of God appeared to the woman, and he said to her, behold, you are a kora v'lo yaladit, v'harit, you will be pregnant, and you'll give birth to a son. Let me ask you, why was it important for him to tell her, you are barren? She knew that. I mean, okay, so what else is new? So here, a malach has to tell her, behold, you are barren. All that he should have said to her is, harit, you're going to be pregnant, be allotted ben, you're going to give birth to a son. I believe that here is another one of the connections between the Haftorah and the Parsha. The Medrash says that there was a struggle for years between Manoah and his wife. Whose fault was it that she had not given birth? She claimed it was his fault, and he claimed that it was her fault. And watch, we're going to see how this unfolds in the next few psukim. Along comes the malach, and he says to her, "Hineinu at akora v'lo yaladet. You are the akora, and therefore you haven't given birth." When she is going to repeat the words of the malach to her husband, she's going to leave this part out. Now, why does the malach tell her this? The malach tells her this for only one reason. Says the Medrash, Bar Kapora Omer, Godol Shalom, greatest peace. Shedibru haktuvim lashon badui b'neviim. The psukim even said things that are not fully true. Bishvil hafil shalom beinish liishto, in order to make peace between husband and wife. Shenema, as it says, hineinu at akara. The malach says to her, you're an akara. Avulo manoach. When the malach is going to speak to Manoach, the malach is going to speak to him later. He's not going to say that to Manoach. That she doesn't say it to Manoach, we understand. I mean, what does she expect? That he'll tell her, like I told you so. And the truth is, it's not important for her to tell it to him, once she knows it. When the malach is going to speak to Manoach, he's also not going to say it. Elo, what is the malach going to say? Mikol Hashem amati Elo Isha Tishamer. All he's going to tell Manoach is, everything that I said to your wife, be careful of. Mikol Makom Samimonim Hitzricha. The Medrash goes on to say that he left the impression with Manoach that maybe she is capable of giving birth. And what she needs is, she needs certain tipul, certain care. And maybe part of it, he may understand, listen, let her not drink any wine and eat anything that's tame, a holy diet, and she will have a child. So that means even the Navi, the Malach, more than that, the Malach is going to say a little bit less than the truth in order to make peace between husband and wife. And the fact is, once he tells her, then the war is over. The struggle between the two is over. The Gemara says, one of the parashiyot that appears in Noso is the halach of Sota, a woman whose husband suspects her of being unfaithful. So part of the process is, she's brought to the Beit HaMikdash, and Parshat Sota is written on cloth, on parchment, and it is... then it's put into the water and it is erased. And the Gemara says that Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mutav Yimache Shemi Al Amayim. I am willing that my name should be erased in the waters in order to Lahatil Shalom Beinish Lishto, in order that there should be peace between husband and wife. I'm ready that my name should be erased in the waters of the Sota. So I'm saying, isn't there a relationship now between the Haftorah and the Parsha? And I'm saying, not to the Parsha of Nazir, but there's a relationship now between the Haftorah to the Parsha of Sota, a completely different Parsha. That God is ready that his name should be erased in order to remove the tension between a husband and wife, to end the struggle between the two, to bring peace bein ish leishto. And here we see that the Malach himself is going to speak a little bit less than the truth in order to bring peace between husband and wife. Let's go further. V'atro now, hishomni na, please be careful. V'al tishti yayin v'shecha, don't drink wine or intoxicating beverages. V'al tofli kol tamei, do not eat anything that is impure. Ki hino chora v'yoladet ben, because behold, you are going to be pregnant and give birth to a son. Umora lo yala al rosho. No scissor shall go upon his head. Ki nizir elokim yiyahanar min abatim, because the child is going to be a Nazirite to God from the womb. V'hu yachel lahoshiach yisrael miyad plishtim, he is the one who will begin to save Israel from the hands of the plishtim. V'hu yachel lahoshiach et yisrael miyad plishtim. First of all, we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, of course, what we have to understand is what we are reading now is unparalleled in all of Tanakh. There are a number of women who were told that they were going to give birth, but none were given instructions about how to conduct themselves prior to the birth of the child. Sarah knew that she was going to give birth to a child. For that matter, even Hagar knew that she was going to give birth to a child, Ishmael. No special instructions, nothing. Certainly not to have placed upon the child Nezirut from the forebirth. You know, the Nezirut of Shimshon is completely different than that which we're talking about in the Torah. In the Torah, in the Parsha, it is a voluntary act. Over here, Shimshon wasn't asked. It was imposed upon him. Imposed upon him even before birth for the rest of his life. So that we're studying something that is so completely different than anything else that we have in all of Torah. Even Moshe Rabbeinu. So we know about Moshe Rabbeinu. All that we know is Vayelech Ishmi Beit Levi, a man from the house of Levi went and he married a woman from Levi. We don't know of any special instructions. Yes, he becomes special after his birth, that he is hidden for 3 months, put into a basket that is put into the Nile. But the only one about whom there are clear instructions in advance of his birth, how mother is supposed to conduct herself, and the restrictions that are imposed upon him for the rest of his life. He is the one who's going to begin to save the Jewish people from the hands of Plishtim. Says the Medrash the following. Amar Abchama Bar Abchanina, Hu chal shvato shel Avimelech, dechtiv im tishkor li ulenini ulenechdi. There is an opinion in the Gemara that is brought in a number of Midrashim. Rashi brings it about 3 or 4 times in Chumash, and then later on in Tanakh. Avimelech entered, Avraham Avinu entered into an agreement with Avimelech. A peace treaty between the two of them, between them, their children, their grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren, 4 generations. Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Jews out of Mitzrayim, it says, God didn't take them through the land of the Plishtim because the treaty between Avram and Avimelech was still in force, and therefore Jews can't have the land of Plishtim. Can't be theirs. There are really going to be 2 approaches. One approach is going to be that the oath, the agreement that was entered into between Avram and Avimelech still remains in force. And since it still remains in force, then Jews cannot go out to wage war against Plishtim, but an individual can. All the story of Shimshon is going to be the story of an individual, one person who is at odds with Plishtim. He doesn't represent the Jewish people. He's not fighting on their behalf. He has entered into a relationship with a woman and he was cheated. He was deceived. And therefore he begins to struggle with them and he weakens them. He frightens Plishtim. He keeps Plishtim busy so that Plishtim can't attack Israel. But Jews are suffering from Plishtim. Plishtim are not only in the Gaza Strip, they've already moved further out than the Gaza Strip. They're already Plishtim throughout areas of Yehuda. Jews are suffering from Plishtim for many years. It's a struggle that's going to go on for 100 years. It's going to be Shimshon, and then it's going to be Shmuel, and then it's going to be Shaul, and then David, and only David ultimately is going to destroy Plishtim to the point that they never raise their heads again as Plishtim. So on the one hand, there are those who hold that Israel cannot go out to fight against Plishtim. For one of two reasons. Either because there is still an agreement that had been entered into between Avram and Avimelech, or because even if the agreement is over, but they're incapable of fighting them. In the next parak, it's going to say, Uplishtim Moslim be Israel. The Plishtim were ruling over Israel. Israel was not able to wage war with them. And therefore the Rebbe Nisim brings this unusual creature, a creature called Shimshon, who is able to wage war, a private war between him and Plishtim. The Gemara says, I started reading the Gemara, Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, V'hu Yochel Lahushiat Yisrael Miat Plishtim, he will begin, Lahushiat Yisrael Miat Plishtim, they read something more into the word Yochel. In the word Yochel, they read the word Huchal, they had broken the agreement. What does Torah say? Plishtim broke the agreement. A person makes a commitment, so it says Lo Yachel Devaro. A person is not permitted to that his words should be chulin. You make a commitment, you have to keep it. But Hu Yachel, the reason why he was permitted to begin to save Jews from the hands of Plishtim, because Plishtim had broken their part of the agreement. I'll tell you. The fact is that this, you have no idea to what extent this is of contemporary nature. I'll tell you, I can't help but get Torah into my shir. I knew what you thought. You thought I was going to say I can't help but get politics into my shir. That's what I said. I can't help but get Torah into my shir. There's been an ongoing struggle in the pages of different Torah journals and magazines between a number of people in Yehuda v'Shomron. Yoel Ben Nun of Ofrahil, Yoel Ben Nun writes that the agreement, the Oslo agreement, is an agreement that we have to keep. We have no choice. Why do we have to keep it? We have to keep it because, take a look, Avram entered into an agreement with Avimelech and Klal Yisrael had to keep it. Yehoshua entered into an agreement with the Givonim and Klal Yisrael had to keep it. There was a treaty between Tzidkiyahu, the last of the kings of Yehuda, and Nebuchadnezzar, and Tzidkiyahu broke the agreement, and Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu told him that he's going to suffer and he's going to be punished for having broken the agreement. So therefore, Yoel Ben Nun says that, listen, whether we like the agreement or not, the agreement has the force of halacha. Because, as Chazal say, why didn't Klal Yisrael break the agreement with the Givonim? The Givonim who came to Yahushua really deceived him. They said that we come from a distant land. It was clear, outright deceit, and a few days later they knew that they had been deceived. But it would have been a chilul Hashem to break the agreement. Those who oppose Yoel Ben Nun say correctly, in each one of the cases, for example, if we begin with Avimelech, there was a shvuah
B'Shem Hashem, there was an oath that was taken in the name of God. It was not only a treaty, it was a treaty with an oath where the name of God was uttered, and that's why the name of the place where the agreement was made was called Be'er Sheva Kisham Nishba'u Shneim, because they're both of them swore to one another. So where the agreement is an agreement with a shvua, an oath b'shem Hashem, then there is chil Hashem, a desecration of God's name to break it. But where there is no oath b'shem Hashem, if the agreement is one that is in opposition to halacha, there is absolutely no responsibility on Klal Yisrael to keep it. But even according to those who hold that the agreement is binding, that's conditional on the other side not breaking the agreement. The moment Plishtim broke the agreement in the days of Shimshon, for all intents and purposes, Klal Yisrael already was no longer bound by the agreement. And that's what Chazal say. Vuhu Yachel, he was able to begin to save Jews from the hands of Plishtim because Plishtim had made whole Chulin their part of the agreement.
You don't want to break the agreement, even if you have every opportunity.
Getting worried. In I'll read it in chapter 14. It says in Pasuk 4. Shimshon tells his parents that he wants this girl from Plishtim. So his father and his mother say to him, "Ha'ein b'benot achecha, there isn't a good Jewish girl. Ki ata holech lokachat isha miPlishtim ha'areli, you have to take a woman from Plishtim." Vayome Shimshon aloviv. Shimshon said to his father, "Otak kachli, take her for me. Because in my eyes, she's the one that I want." It's interesting, only now I notice his father and his mother are the ones that tell him, "Can't you find a good Jewish girl?" And Shimshon says to his father, he doesn't speak to his mother, most probably because you can't talk to the mama about something like this. You can't. She's most probably so broken up about it that there's nothing that can be said. So I'll tell you, the Gemara tells us what her name was.
Okay.
It's a Gemara in it's in the Gemara, and it's in Hatzlil Phoni. That's why. All right. And there's reason. Hatzlel comes from the word tzel, that she was in the shadow or the shade of the angel. Remember, the angel spoke to her. He came to her. And the second time around, he's going to come to her. In a sense, the Gemara says she was a greater tzaddikus than Manoach was. All right. I wanted to read the pasuk that says, "Va'avi v'imo lo yadu," his father and his mother didn't know, "ki me'ashem hu," his desire for this woman from Plishtim was an act of God. "Ki to'einohu mefakesh miPlishtim," he was looking for an excuse to start up with them. "Uba'et ha'hi," and at that time Plishtim Moshlim b'Yisrael, Plishtim are ruling over Israel, which means that Israel simply was not capable of engaging in a struggle against it. It just wasn't possible to rule. They were Moshlim over Israel to the point they disarmed. Yes, they disarmed Jews. By Shaul later, it's going to say that on the day of battle there were only two swords. The Israeli army had two swords, Shaul and Yonatan. And even, yes, as you say, agricultural implements that had to be sharpened, had to be brought down to Plishtim. We're talking about Plishtim, who had, for all intents and purposes, overrun Yehuda and Binyamin. It was tragic. It was tragic. They started out at the coast, and from the coast, they moved outwards to really have rule over all of Israel. We're talking about Beit Shemesh, and Even further, Plishtim's Klal Yisrael suffered from Plishtim for 100 years. All right. Let's go further. Vatovo Haisha Vatom Ali Isha, the woman came and told her husband Lema so, saying, Ishu Elokim Bo Elai, Ishu Elokim Bo Elai, a man of God came to me. She does not yet know that it's an angel who has come to her. She thinks he's Ishu Elokim. Ishu Elokim means a prophet. She doesn't know that this is an angel. Umareyu, but she says Umareyu, he looks kemare malech Elokim no ramiot, he looks like an angel of God, very fearsome, awesome. Velo shiltu, I didn't ask him emizehu, from where he is. Vet shmolo, he gidli, he didn't tell me his name. Vayomali, and he said to me, we find something else that I believe, in a sense, is another one of the little relationships between the Sedra and the Haftarah. In the Sedra also we have something that is repeated 12 times. The Korbanot of the Nesiim, the sacrifices of the Nesiim on the day of Chanukat HaMishkan, repeated over and over again. And wherever there is repetition in Torah, we always have to ask ourselves the question, why the repetition? No such thing as repetition for no reason. And of course there's a great deal that's said about the repetition of the Korbanot of the Nesiim, each one the same thing day after day after day, in a sense to show that it was not that which they brought outwardly that was important. Each one brought it with a sense of devotion and Yirat Shamayim, and in a sense, yes, all of the tribes are equal in their dedication of the Mishkan. Here also we're going to have the same thing repeated 3 times. And when something is repeated 3 times, then we have to therefore be careful and take a look. Why is it repeated 3 times? Are there differences? And what's the significance and the meaning of the differences? So here, now it's being repeated for the second time. The Malach has spoken to the wife of Manoach. Manoach's wife is now telling it to her husband. Let's see how she says it. She says, Vayomali, he said to me, Hinoch harovi yoladet ben, behold, you are going to be pregnant, you'll give birth to a son. Obviously, we see immediately that she left out part one. She left out the part, behold, you are the barren one who cannot give birth. V'yata now, altishti yayin v'sheichar, don't drink wine or intoxicating beverages, v'altochli kol tuma, ki nizir elokim yiyeh hanar, because the child is going to be a nazir to God from the womb ad yom moto. Now, the Malach didn't say ad yom moto. The Malach didn't say until the day of his death. The Malach didn't say until the day of his death, because the Malach knew that Shimshon is not going to remain the nazir until the day of his death. Delilah is going to cut off his hair. So therefore the Malach didn't say it. But there's something she left out. And what she left out is extremely important. She doesn't tell her husband, and it's not mentioned again in the parak, that he's going to begin to save Jews from the hands of the Plishtim. She's most probably afraid to say that. The fear that she has of saying it is already an indication of to what extent Jews were under the heel, I would say, under the occupation of Plishtim. She's afraid, you know, the walls have ears. God forbid somebody is going to hear something of this. Who knows what they're going to do with my little Debala? She doesn't breathe a word. We don't even have any indication whether she ever tells it to... to Manoach. You said to Manoach, I just stopped to think about something. Wait a minute. We learned in the second chapter, remember I just spoke to you about that pasuk where the father and mother say to him, why do you want to marry a shiksa? Why can't you marry a good Jewish girl?
So Shimshon says to his father, Shimshon says to his father, take her from me, ki hi yashra be'inai. Is it possible that he doesn't have to say it to his mother?
Because
the mother may understand. The mother may understand something as unusual of this, because she knows that Shimshon is a tzaddik. You understand? She knows what Shimshon is. Shimshon is a tohor v'kadosh. Can you imagine? A teire yinge man, a tzaddik yisoid olam, comes to the man and says, I want this shiksa. The mammon may understand it, because the mother is the one who knows. She heard from the malach, v'hu yachel lahushia et yisrael mi'a plishtim. He's going to begin to save Jews from the hands of plishtim. You see, you inspire me. It may be, but we have no indication whatsoever that Manoach's wife has shared this information with her husband. It may very well be that this information is better, shashtil. That's the example. And we had discussed that in a shir. It explains a lot of things. Rivka, when she's suffering during her pregnancy, she goes to the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva to find out what's happening. What's going on? If this is the suffering, Lama Zeh Anochi, what do I need it for? Why did I want to become pregnant? So what is she told over there in the Beis Medrash Hashem Ve'eva? That Shnei Goyim Bevitnech Ushnei Le'umim Mimei Ayich Yiporeidu Ula'om Mil'om Yemaz V'rav Yavotzor. You know what she's being told? She's being told the history of the world, that there are two nations who are locked in eternal struggle. And during the course of histories, one nation will be stronger than the other. But ultimately, at the end of history, the younger one is going to overpower the older one. Which means, therefore, that she knows that the chosen one is the younger one, Yaakov, not Esav. Therefore, she can act in order to make sure that Yaakov is going to get the brachas. But she never tells Yitzchak. Why doesn't she go and tell Yitzchak at some point, you should know that I went to the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva, and they told me the future. You want to give it to Esav, but I'm telling you that in the end of history, Esav is not going to win. Esav is going to be vanquished by Yaakov. Why doesn't she tell him? You know why she doesn't tell him? I'll tell you why she doesn't tell him. Because she has to tell him, I mean, her heart is broken now because of this, that she finds out that she's carrying two children, and these two children are going to struggle against one another throughout all of history. She's told that Esav is going to kill millions upon millions of Jews throughout all of history. This is the good news that she has to bring to her husband before the two of them are going to be born. Let him at least enjoy the Shulam Zucha and the Bris. Let him enjoy the Bar Mitzvah. Aggravation he's going to have already by the Chasana when this Esav. It's similar to something else. I once said it in another context. The famous Rashi that I've come back to a number of times in Parsha Vayechi, when Yaakov toward the end of his life asks Yosef, "Al notig bereni v'mitzrayim, don't bury me in Egypt. Take me back and bury me in the Marat Hamachpelah." And he says over there, Vani, the famous pasuk, Vani bivoi mi Padan, I, when I came from Padan Aram, Meita Olai, Rachel died on the road, and I buried her there, the famous Rashi, where Rashi says that Yaakov tells Yosef, I knew all of your life, ki yesh belibcha Olai, that in your heart you hold it against me, that your mother, I didn't take your mother to bury her in the Maraz HaMachpelah. Not only I didn't take her into the Maraz HaMachpelah, out there on the road, the way to Ephrat by Bethlehem, I buried her. I didn't even take her into the city. And I knew your whole life that you held this against me. Do you understand? Let's say Yaakov knows that the child who's most cherished to him, the child that he has entered into with the deepest relationship,
this, at some point, at some level, there's a distance. The child holds against, Tata, look what you did to my mother. You couldn't bury her in the Marzal way. You couldn't even bury her in a decent place. You buried her on the road. And now at the end of his life, now I'm asking you to take me and bury me in Maris HaMachpelah. Why? Because Al Pi HaDibur Kevarti Hasham, I buried her there. It was the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think I did it alone? You think I didn't love your mother? Of course I did. But it was Al Pi HaDibur Kevarti Hasham. It was divine instruction that I buried her there. Why? Because I know that when Jews are going to go into exile and they're going to pass Kever Rachel, Rachel is Mevak Albaner, she's going to come out and stand before God and say, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I refuse to be consoled. You must bring them back. And who's going to be given the promise of Yishavu Bonim L'Gvulam? Who is God going to say that the children are going to return? It's only to Rachel. So I asked the question over there, if for all of these years Yaakov knows that Yosef holds this against him, why didn't he tell him? So my answer is, so what? He has to tell him that there's going to be a Churban and the Jews are going to go into exile. This is the good news that he has to share with him. This is the good news. Just like Rivka, she has to come home and say, Yitzchak, do you know where I was today? I was in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'Eva. You want to know why I'm having such difficulty in this pregnancy? We have twins. And there's good news and there's bad news. The good news, I'm carrying twins. And the bad news is that one of them is going to attempt to destroy the other and kill countless millions throughout all of history. That's the good news. The bad news. This she has to share with him. So we're saying the same thing. Yaakov has to share with Yosef that there's going to be a churban and in chains, Jews are going to be taken out into exile. And your mother is the one who's going to pray for them. Yaakov is ready to accept that his dearest beloved son is the one who will hold it against him, but he doesn't have to be the bearer of bad tidings. The wife of Manoach does not have to tell Manoach that you should know who Yochel Lahushiat Yisrael Miyad Plishtim. She doesn't have to say it because she knows that there's going to be grave danger. For all she knows, if she utters Avort, the moment you say it, the moment you say Arayz Avort, you're not a balabas on it. Who knows what's going to happen in the event that she says. And furthermore, she's going to find out later that she's absolutely correct. Because the Malach never says it to Manoach. The Malach doesn't say it to Manoach. And if I'm not mistaken, I think ultimately he's going to die. Shimshon is going to die in the lifetime of his parents. At the end it says that they came up and they buried him. And they buried him. I'm not certain. The last pasuk in the story of Shimshon is Vayerdu Echov V'chol Beit Avihu. His brothers and his whole father's house came down. Vayisu Oton, they carried him. Vayalu Vayigberu Oton, they buried him between Tzora and Eshtol B'kever Manoach Aviv, in the kever of Manoach's father. So he didn't die. He did good. I never noticed the pasuk. It's good. He was buried by the kever of Manoach Aviv, v'hu shafat et Yisrael eskim shon, and he judged Israel for 20 years. Is it possible, therefore, that what happened to Boaz will not happen to Manoach? Boaz, all of his children. Died in his lifetime, and for that matter, remember, Oved, who was born after the death of Boaz, because the Gemara says that Boaz died the day after the wedding, the morning after the wedding, he died. So that means he never knew that Ruth was going to give birth to a child. Manoach dies before Shimshon. The Kever Manoach, if I didn't notice it. The reason why they don't, each one of them, the reason why they don't tell is because one does not want to be the bearer of evil tidings. And over here, by the wife of Manoah, it's not so much a matter of evil tidings, but it certainly is something that can present the child to be born with grave danger. They are frightened of Plishtim. But do you see the extent to which they're frightened? If anything, the absence or her refusal to tell him is an indication of the extent to which they are under the heel of Plishtim. Frightened. The wall have ears. Who knows who's going to hear? Alright. Let's go a little further. Another few psukim. Vayetar Manoach al Hashem, and Manoach prayed to Hashem, Rayomet, be Hashem, please God, Ishu Elokim, the man of God, the Navi, Asher Shalach, to whom you sent, Yavona Ode Leinu, let him come again to us, Vyoreinu Manase Lanar Ayulad, let him teach us what we should do with the child who's going to be born. Vayishma Elokim, become Manoach, God, listen to the voice of Manoach. Vayavon Malach Elokim, Ode Elohisha, the Malach Elokim comes again, and to whom does he come? He comes to the woman. She's sitting out in the field, and her husband Manoach is not with her. It doesn't say the first time around whether she was out in the field. Here it says that she was out in the field. I'll tell you why I'm wondering about this now. When Yaakov wants to speak to his wives, where he wants to plan the flight from the house of Lavan in order to return home, so it says he took them out into the field. Why doesn't he speak to them at home? Because somebody can always listen. Wolves have ears. Yonatan wants to speak to David, and David to Yonatan. It says that they go out into the field so that they shouldn't be overheard. Over here it says, "Vayomer Malach Elokim od el ha'isha v'hi yoshevet basadeh." She's sitting in the field. It doesn't say before that she was in the field. So now I'm beginning to ask all sorts of questions that I don't have answers for. Why is it important to say it now? If it's important to say that they were in the field now, why didn't it say before that they were in the field? You hear what my problem is? The road. Okay, think about it. Go ahead. He went out into the field. It says, Vayetzer Yitzchak went out lo suach basadeh. He went out to pray in the field. But I see there's a medrash here that says, why did the Malach come to her and not to him? Remember, he's the one who prayed for the Malach to come. And more than that, it says, Vayishma ha'elokim b'kol Manoach. Elokim listened to the voice of Manoach, which means he's answering Manoach's request. But he comes to her and not to him. So the Gemara, the Medrash says two reasons. One is shelo lifsol dvarev harishonim shama leisha. No, if the message was given first to the isha, it has to be reiterated again to her, so that there should not be any possibility of a clash between the two. That he will understand it one way and she will understand it another way, and then the two of them are going to get together and there's going to be a difference of opinion. Well, what did the Malach say? Dovaracha. Another reason, kedei lechavavo be'enav, in order that he should love her even more. That take a look, the Malach comes to kedei lechavavo be'enav. In a sense, does not that fit in with the Chazal that we mentioned earlier, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mutav, let my name be erased in order that it should bring peace, bein ish le'ishto. Vatamar ha'isha, the pasuk says, the woman hurried, vatorats, she ran, vatageid li'ishon, she told her husband, She said to him, behold, that man who came that day, and that day, it seems to me, first of all, it was yesterday. The following day he returns again. Manoach got up and he went after his wife, and he came to the Ish, and he said to him, Ha'atoha Ish, Asher dibarto el ha'isha, are you the man who spoke to the woman? And he said, Ani. Manoach said, Ata, now your vote, whatever, let your words come. What is it that we should do for the boy? And the Malach is going to speak to Manoach and tell him that everything that I said to your wife, to the woman, this is what you are supposed to do. And he's going to reiterate it again, but he's not going to say that Shimshon is going to be the one who is going to begin the struggle against Plishtim. Yes?
Yes?
If not for that last pasuk, we would have no idea what happened to the family afterwards. It says his brothers came down. Even though there is, if I'm not mistaken, there is a medrash of some sort, which I don't remember now, but not certain, but I'll check into that. Anyway, the important thing over here is, I just want to run quickly through some of the things that we said, just to sum up. Now, it's obviously the Haftorah is chosen because this is a Haftorah where we have a living Nazir. A child is born. A Nazir completely different than the one that is described in the Torah. The one that is described in the Torah does not talk about a person whose mother has to watch herself before the child is born. It's talking about a grown individual who voluntarily accepts upon himself nezirut. Here we're talking about a most unusual kind of nezirut, the nezirut of Shimshon. So therefore I said, in a sense, the Haftorah comes to complement and complete the parasha in Torah. In Torah, it's the Torah Shebichtav. The Haftorah tells us the Torah Shebalpeh, that there is another kind of Nazir. We also said that Shimshon, there's the idea that the Malach comes and says, Hine, you are a korav alo yaladet, in order to bring Shalom ben Ish Lishto, that machloket should end. So too in the parasha we have, God says, Mutav Yimach Hashemi, let my name be erased by Parshat Sota, as long as I can bring peace ben Ishli Ishto. I think that we should also mention there is a Rashi in the parasha that says what comes after Parashat, first comes Parashat Sota, and after Parashat Sota comes Parashat Nazir. And the Rashi asks, it's the Gemara that says it, why does Parashat Nazir follow Parashat Sota? And Rashi says, Kol haroes sota bitul kula yazir atzmo min hayayin, a person who sees a sota who bitul kula in her time of sinfulness, yazir atzmo min hayayin, should take an oath not to drink wine, because it is wine that brings people to the frivolity that leads to sexual sins. Yes, it removes inhibitions. Gemara says about Shimshon holach achar einav, lefichoch nokru plishtim et einav. Shimshon followed his eyes, and therefore ultimately his punishment was that the plishtim gouged out his eyes. If this is what happened to a Shimshon who was a tzaddik, if he would not have been a nazir, who knows what could have happened. So therefore, since every great advantage has some disadvantage that comes with it, Shimshon is going to be given awesome strength. Strength which is divine. Great strength. The kind of strength given to no other human being in all of creation. It means, therefore, that there is a part of Shimshon that is very, very physical. And in that being very physical, it means, therefore, that everything apart physical is going to be more intense. He needed, therefore, to be a nazir in order to temper, mellow the intensity of to control. So therefore he had to have this Nazirut. I always wonder, what do you think Shimshon looked like? I think Shimshon didn't look like any of the drawings or any of the paintings of Shimshon. We're talking about a divine strength, a spirit of God that is in him. He most probably looked like a very, very simple, average individual. Not bulging with muscles. But no. Very, very simple. An edle yid. Very, on the contrary.
With long hair.
On the contrary, there should have been nothing about his appearance that would leave the impression that he's outstanding. On the contrary. So therefore, he looked very, very simple, and therefore he was able to take them by surprise. Okay.